This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to a special Tuesday edition of NHL Midweek. Alongside Richard Pollock, I am your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Coming up on the program this evening, in a matter of minutes, mere minutes, in fact, Jarmo Kekäläinen, general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, is going to join us. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Blue Jackets analyst Jody Shelley. And, of course, we're going to conduct a preview of tomorrow evening's Jets-Blue Jackets game. Richard, good evening. Nice to see you on this Tuesday night.
Yeah, nice to see you too, Drew. I think Jody Shelley's a Manitoba boy, if I recall correctly, as well. I'm pretty sure he is.
Well, there you go. So we'll talk a little bit. Yes, that does sound familiar. Obviously, he was I guess he was an original Blue Jacket, right?
Thompson, Manitoba.
Thompson, Manitoba. Yeah. There you go. So we'll talk to Jody Shelley coming up in minutes, and Jarmo Kekäläinen, the general manager, as I mentioned. It'll be a good game tomorrow night. The Blue Jackets, a much improved team from what we saw when we played in Columbus earlier this year.
Yeah, been a tough year. I mean, if you take out the injuries and all that they've had to deal with, I mean, different situation this season. No doubt about it. Tough to play. Kind of molded after St. Louis, in my opinion, and Certainly not an easy night when you play them, especially physically.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jarmo Kekäläinen. Jarmo, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening. My pleasure.
Jarmo, obviously we're going to talk to you about the, it's sort of been an active year for yourself in the front office in the Blue Jackets, signing a number of players to long-term contracts, but we wanted to start with what's coming up this weekend in Columbus, that of course being the NHL All-Star Game, a number of years in the making, as of course the Blue Jackets were first expected to host the All-Star Game back during the lockout year. What does having the All-Star Game and having the focus of the NHL in Columbus mean for the organization?
Well, I think it's an honor. I think it's a great event both for the organization, the franchise, and the city of Columbus to celebrate the great game and have a lot of fun with the best player on the planet in Columbus, having fun playing a hockey game and showing their skills.
You know, Jarmo, you recently signed Nick Foligno to a significant contract extension. I'm just wondering, was his performance this year, like, would you have signed that contract to the level that you did and the term and the money you did at the end of last season, or has Foligno's performance this year really put that over the top for you in terms of signing this deal?
Well, I think that we would all be very fortunate if we could go back in time and sign the guys at the perfect moment. We don't have, unfortunately. So this is the way the market works, and he was going to become a UFA after this year, And with the year that he was having, I'm sure that he would have been in high demand in the open market. We had to think about those things and how we would replace Nick Foligno, and he's a big part of our team, big part of our future. So this was a way to lock him up for long term, and that's what we had to do.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Columbus Blue Jackets general manager Jarmo Kekäläinen. Jarmo, you also signed Brandon Dubinsky to a contract extension earlier this season. What effect, if any, did Dubinsky's contract extension have on the contract extension that Nick Foligno ended up signing?
Well, every contract that's signed in the NHL has effect on the other. And they're all comparables, and that's what the agents use, and that's what the players' union use to their advantage, and that's what we have to use to present our case. So every contract that is signed, and especially in the similar positions, they're always being compared to each other, and that's how we live by.
Yeah, Ryan Johansson's had a terrific year thus far, and you know you go back to the training camp, and of course there's a bit of a protracted negotiation with him, signed eventually to a three-year deal. Is there anything that you go back and change about the way that was all handled? We talked about it on the show at length, and I thought that, you know, your position was reasonable throughout. But if you could go back, would there be anything you change, or are you comfortable with how things went?
Oh, I'm very comfortable with how things went. And he was a restricted free agent, and we have to use the CBA as it is written. Mm-hmm. That's how we have to conduct our business, and that's what we do with Nick Foligno's, and that's what we do with Brandon Dubinsky. Those two guys were going to be unrestricted free agents, and Ryan Johansson was a restricted free agent. Two completely different cases, and like I said, they'll use the CBA to their advantage when they have that luxury, and that's business, and we accept that. And when we have that advantage, we have to use that too, and that's just. It's just protecting the franchise, its rights, and its future.
You know, it's interesting on that point, Yarmo. When the CBA, the original law code, not the most recent one, took place, did you think that that second contract, did you ever think that it would be handled seemingly the way it has been in terms of, you know, players coming off their entry-level deals and signing long-term deals right after that? Because based on the old system, you know, when players were UFAs when they were 31, it seemed like that was a rare case. Did that catch you, and do you think the rest of the league by surprise, or was that something that maybe some teams expected?
Well, I think every team has their own strategy and how they approach different situations. I understand the teams that want to sign their restricted free agents to long-term contracts. I'm sure they're doing it to get a reasonable contract that maybe in the long term save some money. And sometimes the bridge contract's the best way to go, so that you keep the player hungry and you still have some questions to be answered. That's up to every organization to decide how they want to approach it. And I can't comment on anybody else's decisions. But I'm sure we'll have some long-term contracts coming out of the entry level in the future when we see that that's the best way to approach it. And there'll be some other times like Ryan Johansson's where we prefer to sign a bridge contract and move on with 2 or 3 year period, and perhaps then we're ready to commit to a long-term contract.
Our guest on TSN 1290 is Jarmo Kekäläinen, the Columbus Blue Jackets general manager. Of course, the Blue Jackets in town to play the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. puck drop at MTS Center. Jarmo, another player you signed long-term, goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky. If you had asked most of the media, the pundits, those of us who are, you know, experts, quote-unquote, you would have said before you signed him that might be another protracted negotiation. Ends up you sign him to a long-term deal. You know, how quickly did that extension come to be, and how was that negotiation?
Well, we had negotiated a little bit before the season started, and then they informed us they didn't want to negotiate during the season, but something changed their mind, and we were very pleased about that and returned to the negotiating table in December, and after that it was fairly quick. I think that Sergei Bobrovsky wanted to stay in Columbus the whole time. We couldn't agree with the numbers before the season started. We got to see more of his great goaltending, especially in the month of December, where he had the great run and he came back to full health from his injury, and we agreed on a contract. He's been great for us, and he's been consistently our best player and our most valuable player, and he's our hardest working guy. So I think it was a decision that was reached mutually by both sides, and he wanted to stay in Columbus. We certainly wanted to keep him and make him our goaltender for long term.
You know, Jarmo, on a more macro level, the goaltending market seems to have changed over the past, you know, 5 to 7 years, let's say. You know, maybe 5 to 7 years ago, some teams were kind of copying maybe Chicago and Detroit in terms of not paying their goaltenders as much, and that seems to have certainly changed. Pekka Rinne, your team with Bobrovsky, many other teams, Henrik Lundqvist. Why do you think the market changed for goaltenders that way?
Well, it's such a unique position. I think that's the biggest reason for it. When you don't have a goaltender, you're really going to miss that part of the, if you once had it. And I'm not talking on anybody's behalf here, but it'll be hard. If you don't have a number one goaltender, if you don't feel that you have a good enough goaltender in this league, it's hard to find one. You can trust all you want in your scouting and projections and think that somebody from the minor league or a great prospect is going to become a number one goaltender in the league in the near future, but we've seen many, many times that it is a hard job to fill. It is very demanding, not only skill wise, but mentally, and that's the mental toughness that it takes to be a number one goaltender in this league, to be able to play 60 games, sometimes even more. It's very rare, and those guys are hard to find. So it seems like whenever any team feels like they have a true number one goaltender, they're going to lock him up long term.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Jarmo Kekäläinen, the Columbus Blue Jackets general manager. Jarmo, in the offseason, you brought in Scott Hartnell from the Philadelphia Flyers. It cost you in exchange R.J. Umberger. You know, what has Scott Hartnell brought to your team in terms of character?
Well, he's an experienced guy. He's been to the Stanley Cup Final. He's approaching his 1,000th game in the league. He's been around. He knows the game, and he creates offense. He plays the game the right way. He's a battler. He goes in front of the net. Just recently in Minnesota, we saw him at his office where he deflected the winning goal in front of the net, and that's Scott Hartnell at his best, going into the front of the net and screening the goalies and deflecting shots, and he's been a good addition for us.
You know, the litany of injuries that the Blue Jackets have suffered this year is well documented in and around the NHL. You know, one player that we haven't seen at all this season is Nathan Horton. Is there any update on the status and maybe the future playing career of Nathan Horton?
No, we don't have any update at this point.
Jarmo, trade deadline's coming up March 2nd, and we had Brad Treliving on the show about, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now, and talking about the landscape and how really there's so many teams that are kind of in it, and then there's a few teams that aren't and a few teams that are really gunning for. Do you see this trade deadline being any different than the past couple?
No, I think it's going to be the same, and you know, depending on where different teams are at, and I think everybody's going to approach it from a realistic point of view, but at the same time being optimistic too. I mean, we're far from the playoff line right now, but we still believe that we can make it. There's 38 games to be played, and we know that we need a great record in those 38 games, but as long as there's a chance, we keep believing in it.
Jarmo Kekäläinen is the Columbus Blue Jackets general manager. Jarmo, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us. Best of luck the rest of the season, and of course, have a great weekend as Columbus is the host of the NHL All-Star Game this coming weekend.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Jarmo. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Jets and the Blue Jackets. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Jarmo Kekäläinen, general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. In case you missed any of that interview, want to get set for tomorrow night's Jets-Blue Jackets game, that interview will be available on tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Big weekend for Bernstein's. Going to have breakfast on the river.
Yes. They're involved in the raw almond. They're going to have breakfast. That's exactly right.
That's right. This weekend and next weekend.
That's very exciting. I'm looking forward to that.
Hopefully you tell me when you go and I'll go at a different time.
That's right. And we'll go at different weekends. That's a perfect way of going about it. But yes, be sure to check them out on the river, the frozen river.
Yes.
With raw almond this coming weekend.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting indeed. So look forward to that. Sharp guy, Jarmo Kekäläinen.
He is. And I thought it was interesting, a couple of things he said. The most probably that he, you know, if he could go back, essentially, he'd say he would have preferred to sign Nick Foligno to an extension before this great performance. And so what he's doing there is he's acknowledging the free agent market and the UFA market will
inflate a
player's value. And as frankly, that's their right. You know, maybe you get that discount of 30-40% if you have an RFA, but you know, he's not pretending like, oh, he was gonna sign him, and that's what he's gonna sign him to all along. I like the honesty there.
Sure.
And
it's interesting. I also found that Sergei Bobrovsky's representative has, you know, tapped the brakes on a contract negotiation, and then they sort of started it back up randomly in the middle of the year, and the Blue Jackets were happy to oblige.
Well, we talked about this on Saturday's show. What's the market for goaltenders? How many teams need a goalie?
Not a ton.
Three, four.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, you could say Carolina might be interested in one, for example, but with Cam Ward at 6.3. No, right? But that's sure. what I mean. So who's going to sign the guy?
Well, you know, if he hits...
Who's going
to
sign him?
You know, maybe San Jose would have been interested, but do you really want to go to San Jose? Which team has a brighter future?
Also
it's the Columbus Blue Jackets, to my mind.
Yeah, also true. So, I mean, it's a market that the agent acknowledges, or probably... He's probably... is hesitant to acknowledge at the beginning of the year, and then eventually acknowledges that the market for the goaltenders and for his client is not as good as maybe he thought it would be.
Sure.
And there's also risk inherent in waiting, because if he gets injured, then you're really going to cost yourself a lot of money.
He had been injured earlier in the season, of mm-hmm. course, but you're absolutely right. Let's talk about the Blue Jackets. This is a team that struggled this year. We mentioned it in the interview. Just had an absolute ton of injuries.
Yeah.
20-21-3 right now, 43 points. They're 11 points out of the final wild card spot. In the Metropolitan Division, they're fifth in the Metropolitan Division. So this is a team that, you know, a lot of people had high expectations for after last season, getting to the playoffs, really having a very entertaining first round battle with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Without injuries, they'd be in the playoffs right now. The Eastern Conference is terrible.
Yes.
So, I mean, they would be in the playoffs. They've had a ton of injuries, and they have good goaltending, and they have solid forward depth, and their defense may be lacking that star, and they hope eventually Ryan Murray may become, I'm not sure if he will become the star, but certainly a rock-solid defenseman. They have the ability to compete with anybody. They're bigger and they're tough and they're strong. Mm-hmm. And they got pretty good depth scoring-wise. Again, they remind me a lot of St. Louis, and I don't think that's by accident, considering Jarmo Kekalainen's ties to St. Louis and, of course, President John Davidson's ties to St. Louis as well.
That's right.
So it's been a difficult year for them. I think long-term, they'll get a good pick and a very good draft here. And, they have Wenbergen, obviously, played a little bit here this year. Boone Jenner's a younger player. So they have some guys in the system that they have high hopes for, and the depth in the system is going to give Jarmo Kekalainen flexibility down the road. He signed his core to big-time deals. As I said on the show before, I'm a little bit skeptical of signing both Dubinsky and Foligno to big-time deals, because I don't think either of them are going to help you to the extent you might expect based on their pay offensively.
Sure.
One of them I can understand. Both is a little more difficult to stomach, I think, if you're eventually going to go down and try and pay a score. Now, of course, unfortunately, probably they have Nathan Horton's money on long-term injury reserve, and it may be for the foreseeable future. Of course, that's unfortunate because yeah. he's a young player and he's had terrible back injuries, but that has opened up some money for them to spend, and I'm sure played a factor in their contracts.
Absolutely, and I mean, you look at this team, and Ryan Johansson is only seemingly going to improve.
Yeah,
Just under a point a game this year, 43 points in 44 games.
Yeah, that's pretty good considering he was late to camp.
Yeah, missed training camp for the most part in the midst of a contract negotiation.
Which he was foolish to engage in, I just thought his agent's position was ridiculous, but...
It doesn't seem to have cost them that much in terms of production or anything along those lines.
Yeah.
He's a very good player. You mentioned all the prospects they have coming through the system and their injuries. I mean, it's sort of a bit of a lost year for the Blue Jackets, but depending on where they end up come the draft, this could be almost... It's like when the San Antonio Spurs had that terrible year and got Tim Duncan.
It's like the Flyers with Van Riemsdyk, same idea.
That too. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Same idea.
One-year pain for long-term gain.
It depends on how bad they are. If you want to look at the league standings right now, Drew, I mean, Jarmo Kekalainen comes on last segment, talks about he still thinks they have a shot at the playoffs. And
they're 24th in the league.
24th in the league. So they're just outside of that top four or five. And I expect them to create some separation here, to be honest with you.
Sure. I'd expect them to leapfrog over Ottawa, leapfrog over the trash fire that is the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, likely.
Yeah. Who knows about Colorado or Dallas or anything along those lines. But the Blue Jackets coming into Winnipeg tomorrow night.
Well, they're going to play a heavy game.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, and you hear that a lot, but they do. Scott Hartnoe, Ryan Johansson, and Nick Foligno, and Brandon Dubinsky, none of those guys are backing down from anybody. Okay, none of them are. They play a tough game, they're physical, and they can cycle the puck. So the Jets, they're certainly expecting Trouba back tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and there's no lack of size on the back end for the Jets to handle, so the Jets just need to be prepared to play that kind of game as opposed to the transition quick game. It's going to be more of a down-low cycle game.
Well, you hear about sort of the Eastern Conference teams and the Western Conference teams in terms of style.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Jackets are somewhat of a Western Conference style in that they will work you down low like the Ducks would or like the Kings would.
Or the Blues, yeah.
Or the Blues, exactly right.
That's exactly right. So, I mean... The Jets have had mixed success against those teams. They're certainly in every game anyways.
Mm-hmm.
They really seem to be succeeding in those speed games. But, again, a game when you look at it in the standings, a game that you really should win. But not an easy game. And the points that the Blue Jackets have, and that's what Paul Maurice is going to be telling his players, the points and the standings don't necessarily tell the whole story. And the players will know that.
Sure.
Playing against a good goalie, it's a solid defense. Nothing. I don't love their defense. Defense isn't great, Drew.
Well, their defense is without Ryan Murray, like you mentioned.
Yeah, but their defense isn't great anyways. Yeah. It's not a great defense. It's a solid defense, but there's guys on there that make mistakes. You know, David Savard gives it back a bit in his own end. Jack Johnson can make odd decisions at times, but Wisniewski isn't terrific defensively, and some of the other guys are a little bit limited. But overall, it's a very formidable opposition, and you can't take a night off against them.
No, and it's sort of, you know,
it's not like the Leafs. You can beat them when you play poorly. You're not going to beat this team if you play poorly.
That's right. It's only about, you know, three weeks ago or 4 weeks ago now, where, you know, that game right before the Christmas break, where the Jets went in and they didn't overlook the Chicago Blackhawks, and it looked like the Blackhawks may have already checked out for the break. You can't check out too early for the All-Star break in this game tomorrow
Good
night.
Yep.
You know, I know everybody's got their trips planned, and everybody's probably hightailing it out of town come Thursday morning first thing. But you still got to, you know, play the game, and you can't take them for granted because they are so far below you in the standings, in that they're a better team than their record indicates.
They are, absolutely. And so it's going to be a tough battle for the Jets, and, you know, it's going to be a physical game. But again, a physical game before a break, as you mentioned, makes it a little bit easier to stomach.
Sure.
And, you know, guys like Byfuglien and Trouba and Bogosian, you know, they're not going to be tossing. Byfuglien's been tossing a lot of guys around, and frankly, he can kind of toss whoever he wants around.
Yeah.
But most guys in this team, you can't just toss around.
Yeah, well, you would have said that about a lot of guys on Anaheim before that, right. But he's done it anyways.
That's right.
You know, in terms of the Jets, how do they take advantage of the Blue Jackets? You mentioned their defense isn't anything to write home about. What sort of matchups do you see probably taking place tomorrow night?
Well, you're going to get your pick. Right? To be perfectly honest with you, the little lad Wheeler line right now and the way it's going, I don't have any issues with any matchups the Jets get. Meaning, I don't think the Jets absolutely need to be so focused on line matching versus the other team's defense versus Columbus's defense. I'd be more concerned, frankly, about who they match up with forward-wise, which is kind of a reverse of the usual.
Sure.
You probably want to keep him away from Dubinsky's line. Dubinsky can be a real pain in the rear end at times, and as you saw last year against Pittsburgh, he can be a good force there if he's playing against other teams' best players. So that's probably the one guy you'd want to keep that line away from.
And then then you're fine with the Kane, Scheifele, and Frolik line.
There's no pairing on this back end that would frighten me in terms of a shutdown pairing. So you take your chances. Now Ryan Johansson's going to be the guy you want to shut down.
Okay, so how do you match up?
Well, I guess it really depends, Drew, on how, you know, Trouba acquits himself by coming back into the lineup.
Sure.
The thing is usually you say, okay, well, I'm buffing against your biggest line in the opposition here, but I mean Ryan Johansson's a big boy to handle, and Dubinsky and Hartnell are pretty big to handle as well. So and Bogosian's a big tough enough to handle those guys as well. So I would assume you're probably going to see Byfuglien out against the Johansson line just by the way he's been going. You'll ease Trouba back into it and take your chances against, you know, Calvert's line, Brandon Boy there, or Dubinsky's line.
Sure. The Blue Jackets, you know, they have some decent scorers in their top six, but there is a drop off when you look at their third line, which isn't altogether different.
I like Atkinson and Calvert. I don't know anything about Wennberg particularly, except for that he's a first round pick, but Calvert and Atkinson can both score.
So
I mean, for a third line, that's Atkinson is some nice speed. Yeah, no, there's a formidable opposition here. And then their fourth line, you know, that's Letestu. You know, you're talking your fourth line center there. Skilly will be a little bit aggressive, and Corey Trott. That's what it was last game. We'll see what happens there. I mean, that's better fourth line than the Jets have. But, I mean, nothing to really write home about.
No, in terms of the Jets' defensive pairings today at practice, you had Byfuglien with Sherratt, as you'd expect, Enstrom and Bogosian together, and it was Jay Harrison playing the left side with Jacob Trouba. Trouba was a regular jersey wearer. Mm-hmm. Seemed as though he was going to be in the lineup. I think, barring something unforeseen, he'll be in the lineup tomorrow night for the Jets. Mark Stewart and Brian Little both had maintenance days, so it's not clear.
Harrison will be the extra, as far as I'm concerned, and Stewart will be the five. Or the six. He would be the six, obviously, in this group.
Assuming that, of course, he's healthy enough to play tomorrow, and with a maintenance day, you know, you never can tell for sure, but you would expect that it'll be Stewart back returning to his pairing with Jacob Trouba that saw so much success before Trouba went down with the injury at the beginning of December.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets television analyst, to talk more about tomorrow night's Jets opponent at MTS Center. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
6:30 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside analyst Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and your website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Columbus Blue Jackets color analyst on Fox Sports Ohio, Jody Shelley. Jody, good afternoon, good evening, rather, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Jody, obviously brought you on to talk about the Blue Jackets ahead of tomorrow evening's game here in Winnipeg. We just had Jarmo Kekäläinen on about 25 minutes ago or so. Blue Jackets currently 11 points out of a playoff spot. To your mind, are they still playing for this year, or is the focus really now onto next year in what has been a lost season because of all the injuries?
Well, I mean, it's tough as a player. You don't want to be – they're not happy with the situation they're in, but they're definitely playing for this year. This is a team that's a young group. They understand the hand they've been dealt, especially in November. And December was unbelievable. Didn't gain any ground, which is frustrating. But they're a team now that's found their way the last couple games. They went into Boston with a big victory. Last game in Minnesota, a team that's desperate to win, desperate for points. The Blue Jackets win two in a row on the road, which is a great sign. You know, they've got a lot to prove, and this is a team that's got a lot of youth, a lot of tenacity and resiliency, but they're playing for just to win each game, and that's all they can focus on right now. They've been through a lot the last couple of years. They understood that their desperation level had to click in earlier than most teams because they get behind the eight ball. So they used to be in back like that, but they're not looking at the standings. They understand that they just got to win and hope for the best here right now.
Jody, the Jackets, made an acquisition this offseason in acquiring your former teammate, Scott Hartnell, who you played with the Philadelphia Flyers. What can you tell us about Hartnell that you know from playing with him, and what has he brought to the team so far this season?
You know, that's a great question. Scott Hartnell is a guy that, if you're playing against him or you're a fan of the opposition that he's on, you just don't get him. You think he's... You try to figure this guy out. What's his deal? He's got a lot going on, and as a player, you hate playing against him. I honestly couldn't stand him when I played against him. And I got to Philly, and he might be one of the best guys I've played with. He just he cares a lot. He's an emotional player. He's a good teammate. You know, he's getting older. There's a leadership role available for him that he's kind of growing into. He's going to play his thousandth game here in the next few weeks. And he's only 32 years old. So he's a guy that came in at 18. He's learned a lot. He's been in a lot of situations. He's been to the Stanley Cup final. He's been a captain and junior. He's with the young group here. And the one thing that people don't know about him is that he really cares more, and he's more kind of emotional than people would think. You know, he's got that kind of, especially in Philly, he was the guy with the orange hair and the long orange hair and wore the Flyers jersey, but he's a phenomenal teammate. I think the guys here really appreciate having him.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Jody Shelley. Jody is the Columbus Blue Jackets color analyst on Fox Sports Ohio. We were talking about this before we brought you on, Jody. Is Ryan Johansson just under a point a game, 44 games played, 43 points. You know, he had that protracted contract negotiation in the offseason. He missed part of training camp. Are you surprised at how seamlessly he's been able to get back into the Blue Jackets lineup and how there doesn't seem to be any lingering effects to missing part of training camp?
Yeah, big time. I mean, his advantage is he's young, 22, 23 years old, a lot different than when you're 36, 37 years old as far as taking care of your body and worrying about how situations are going to hold you back. I mean, he's a guy, if you watch him tomorrow night here in Winnipeg, he's just playing hockey, and he's just a big body, unbelievable skill, phenomenal with the puck, and he's got kind of that presence of... When he gets the puck, he almost slows down the play because people back off. He's so dangerous, and he wants you to go after him. So, and honestly, I've heard it a lot lately, is that he doesn't know how great he is. And obviously that's a good thing at this point. He's got a long way to go, or he's got a huge upside, and he's got a lot to learn, and he's learning every day. So bright spot for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and who would have thought? Missed training camp. Mm-hmm. Came in the day before the first regular season game, and hasn't missed a game. And he's I mean, he's going to play in the All-Star game. So I actually asked him that. How do you miss training camp and still end up in the All-Star game and not miss any games? And he's like, I don't know. And, you know, his teammates are obviously lobbying for no training camp.
Yeah.
Themselves. Yeah.
Nick Foligno, Jody, is obviously, I mean, he's had a great year as well. He's got 18 goals. That's already his he's tied his career high, and he's only played 43 games so far this year. Did anybody see this coming, and what's been the key to his success?
I think Todd Richards and Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson challenged him at the exit meetings last year. I think they saw it in him. They said, hey, you can take a step as a pro. And he admits it. He says, you know, they challenged me and I responded. And Todd Richards was asked just last week when Nick was awarded to the All-Star team. He said, no, I'm not surprised that Nick Foligno has done this year. You know, he's had it in him. There's been potential. He's taken a massive step this year. And you know, it's great when a young player like Nick grasps that information and takes it to another level in the offseason. And comes in here as a leader and a huge part of this team. This team was decimated with injuries in November. And this guy stepped up in December and said, hey, I can play center. I played center in junior. I know we're thin there. And did a phenomenal job. Wasn't great in the faceoff circle, and he admitted that. He was working on it, learning from the other centermen on the team. But positionally in the defensive zone, he's always great with the puck in a puck possession sense. So very reliable, and Todd Richards had no problem putting him there. And you know, he's just an all-in team guy, and the way he's been rewarded to this point, just great for him. He's had a tremendous 3 weeks, signed a new contract, named to the All-Star team, and now he's the captain of the All-Star team. So I'm not sure what's next for Nick Foligno.
Yeah, he's going to score 50 this year, it looks like.
Whatever, right?
that's the way it's been going so far for him. Jody, Jack Johnson's obviously had some, you know, he's logging about 24, 25 minutes a game. He's playing a lot in Columbus. Obviously, he's dealt with a lot of off-ice issues this year that have made the headlines, unfortunately. How would you rate his play on the ice overall, and how has he been able to deal with all the off-ice issues and continue to, you know, move forward here without missing much time?
Well, Jack Johnson's nothing but a pro. And, you know, the news came out, that big article came out in the Columbus Dispatch, and it was like, you know, going to the rink the next day or the next week, you're just wondering how Jack was going to, you know, was he going to walk around with his head down? Was he going to be moping around? Was he going to be frustrated or emotional with anyone that was around him? But I tell you what, he's been just a pro. It's business as usual for Jack. It might be a relief that things are out there and on the table, and, you know, people understand that he's going through stuff at home. But I'll tell you what, on the ice, he's been... I love his game. He's a big guy. Mm-hmm. He's been in the league a long time. He's lived at Rob Blake's house when he was a young guy in L.A. Learned a lot about being a professional on all levels, on and off the ice. And he carries himself and takes care of himself in the manner you would want. And on the ice, you can't take him out of the lineup. He eats up so many minutes, as you mentioned. And that's so valuable when you have a big, strong, physical player who can play against the top lines of the NHL. With ease, and he's been doing it for such a long time. So, you know, dealing with what he's dealing with off the ice, you got to give it to him. You got to hand it to him, because I know a lot of people in all situations in life, they wouldn't be able to continue as usual with their business with all that weighing on them.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Columbus Blue Jackets color analyst Jody Shelley. Blue Jackets obviously in town tomorrow evening to play the Winnipeg Jets at MTS Center.
Jody, another guy on the back end, David Savardi. I've had a chance to see him play quite a bit. And a guy who can clearly move the puck, you know, offensively gifted. How do you think his defensive game has come along?
It's been awesome. He's if you were to ask me one player who's very underrated for the Columbus Blue Jackets, it's David Savard. He's a big body. He's another guy that got challenged a couple of years ago in the exit meetings. And I don't know. He just is a steady, quiet player. And I mean quiet in the fact that you could watch three games just to an average hockey fan and not notice him. He makes the right decision. He never gets in trouble. You know, he's not overly physical, but he takes away time and space and leans on guys, leans on the best players in the league. Really says he got his confidence last year in the playoffs when he got to play against Sidney Crosby for that six-game series. That was a pretty good series with Columbus and Pittsburgh. His confidence, he said, grew because there was no situation that he wasn't afraid of coming in the camp this year. So when you have a young player like David Savard who gets that experience, learns from it, and really accepted the challenge and did a heck of a job with it, well, there's another bright spot for this Columbus Blue Jackets team is the unsung effort of David Savard.
Jody, you mentioned bright spots for the Columbus Blue Jackets. You look at the team, and there's a little bit of struggles in the standing, and they're not scoring a ton, and they're giving up a few more goals than they normally do. But they're third overall in the league on power play percentage, operating 25% of the time they score a goal. What's been the key to the success for the power play for the Blue Jackets this season?
You know what? They work hard, and I think they work smart. They don't just take one shot on the power play and then they're done with the attack. They're very, very good at retrieving pucks. It's just a strength of theirs. There'll be a shot from anywhere on the power play, and they seem, two out of three times, they seem to get the puck set back up and have another attempt at net at least once. So, you know, when you have a power play that works for that for every puck, every shot, not just one set play and then back down to your end breakout, the best defense is the offense, and the more time you spend in that offensive zone, that's where you get rewarded, and I think that's where this power play is just having success. When Todd Richards says they're hardworking, you know, of course they got Matty Calvert and guys going to the front of that and being that present in the dirty area. But for the guys like Ryan Johansson, Nick Foligno, Scott Hartnell, James Wisniewski to be aware and work together and retrieve the pucks as a unit and keep the play alive, that's a huge part of any offense.
Final question for you, Jody, and it's always good to have a Manitoba boy on the show, of course. The Columbus Blue Jackets, obviously you have a connection, obviously working now and for Fox and covering the team, but being one of the original Jackets and having the connection you do with the city, how important is it? You know, All-Star games lots of times for media is kind of, oh, you know, it's a game, nobody really is trying, and it's just for the kids. But how much does this game mean for Columbus as a city and kind of recognized in terms of being a hockey city?
Well, you just said it. I mean, the NHL All-Star game is coming to Columbus, Ohio, and Columbus, Ohio is not a spot on the map where you're going to book a ticket and go for a vacation or go to visit anything there. But if you get a chance to go there, it's tremendous. It has so much to offer. NHL team, the Ohio State Buckeyes just won the national championship. They hold 105,000 in their building. The town is Buckeye crazy. The Cavaliers are 2 hours north. You know, the Reds and the Bengals are 2 hours south. Oh, the Browns are north, too, in Cleveland. I can't forget about them.
Well, you might have to.
Columbus, Ohio, this is a big deal. And this town sells a lot of things and hosts a lot of events. But especially starting this week, when after the outdoor Winter Classic on January 1st, the NHL shifted to Columbus, and it's just been unbelievable the frenzy that's gone on there to set up for this amazing event. And the people in Columbus are starting to figure it out that, hey, there's an outdoor rink, an outdoor park, All-Star Park there, and everything is turning to hockey. And there's a huge hockey following. And a lot like Canada, Columbus is a great host. Anywhere in Canada you go, it just seems like the people there and the communities really rally and host that event in a just a spectacular fashion. And this group that we've got here, this Columbus, you know, the groups that have stepped up and the Blue Jackets and all the sponsors, I'm telling you, I'm not just talking. It's a really warm feeling. So we're proud to have the All-Star Game, and it's going to be a great event.
You forgot to mention Jenny's Ice Cream there, Jody.
No, I could go on, not just Jenny's. We've got a lot of good things there.
Yeah. Jody Shelley is our guest on NHL Midweek, the Columbus Blue Jackets color analyst. Jody, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for doing this evening.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
Take care, Jody. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets broadcaster, for joining us to talk about the Blue Jackets. Game time, 8 p.m. tomorrow here on TSN 1290. Three-headed monster will bring you the call. Bayak, Edmonds, Knighty. Some breaking news courtesy of TMZ. The great one, Wayne Gretzky, now the great-grandpa. Daughter Paulina gave birth apparently on Monday to the first grandchild of Wayne and Janet Gretzky. So congratulations to Paulina and to Wayne and Janet on becoming grandparents. How's that make you feel? Make you feel a little old?
I guess so, Drew. I never thought about it that way. I'm just thinking about Jody Shelley when he played in the NHL. Like, that was a scary guy. Jody Shelley was tough. Probably still is very tough.
I would assume he would be still.
But on the ice, a tough guy. But a great guy. And you watch him on TV, and of course, great interview there, I thought. Great character. Great character player, and does a nice job covering the Blue Jackets. And they do a nice job. One thing about the Blue Jackets, and when he used to write for, do the morning papers on illegalcurve.com, great coverage. I know the Dispatch, Columbus Dispatch there does own a part of the team, or at least did at some point for an extended period of time. They've always done a great job of covering the team in the paper. Aaron Portsline and Michael Arachi and a couple other guys there that do that. When you focus, when you give that much to the sports section, you know, to hockey, the fans, I think, are more drawn to the sport. And it's been a great, you know, you'll see some cities in the States where they don't get, you know, they're not afforded as much coverage.
Sure. It's a chicken and the egg argument there, of course.
So it's I think that's contributed to the growth for sure. And as people saw last year when they were up against Pittsburgh in a terrific first round series, the support was there. And to be honest with you, considering the lack of success they had for such an extended period of time, their attendance numbers weren't terrible.
No, they really weren't. And you always knew that it was a good hockey market. It's just a matter of they were desperate for getting a quality team, or at least the semblance of a team that actually had a plan and an organizational direction. And really, for the longest time under Scott Housen, you didn't see that. And I don't want to lay the blame squarely on him, but the turnaround...
No, because some of the guys there right now are people he put in play, you know, players that he acquired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, you look at it now with John Davidson and with Jarmo Kekalainen, and you know that there's a very steady hand guiding the ship that is the Columbus Blue Jackets right now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to that game tomorrow because they are a very entertaining team to watch, and it should be a good game tomorrow night at MTS Center. Where there won't be a good game is at Investors Group Field coming up next winter.
Or any game at all.
Or any game at all. Because as we all expected, and we were waiting for the announcement, the Heritage Classic, everyone thought, was going to be played in Winnipeg in 2015-16. And as reported by Gary Lawless today on Hustler and Lawless in the Winnipeg Free Press, of course, the NHL and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers could not reach an agreement on the sort of the financial arrangements behind that game. And as a result, it's been, and the date when that game would be played... And as a result, it's now going to be scheduled in December 2016 as opposed to either December 2015 or early in 2016.
I just don't know. Forget the lack of agreement aside, why are they wanting to play this game in December? I mean, I know the Jets play a lot of home games in December, but it'd be awfully cold in December, wouldn't it? Like, why wouldn't it be played earlier in the year or later in the year? Like, you know, early November, early March, or late February kind of thing. I mean, I guess heating the stadium obviously is an issue there.
Yeah.
But then why not play right after the Bomber season when they don't host a Grey Cup the following year? Just to me, like, why would you wait for such... I know you want to let the season get going, but it's going to be, you know, some of those mid-December days is going to be minus 30, 40.
Look, you're playing an outdoor hockey game in Winnipeg. You can throw
But I mean, Drew, you kind of pick the...
Sure.
Last year, I think Vancouver played at BC Place, granted, but the idea is you played in March. So why couldn't they play it in March again?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a finances thing. The Bombers, by the sounds of it, wanted the NHL to pay the costs associated with keeping the stadium winterized and heating the stadium in the months between, say, the end of the Grey Cup and then whenever this game would be played. I'm not sure why the Jets or the NHL were so upset by that factor. To me, it seems only reasonable.
I just didn't want to pay for it.
Yeah, okay, fine. Both.
And I think it's an NHL-sanctioned event, right?
Yeah, it's an NHL-sanctioned event, and I mean, I'm not really a huge fan of the event to begin with. I don't get the whole hullabaloo around it. It's, you know, it's outside and everything, but is Investors Group Field, watching a hockey game at Investors Group Field, that exciting to you? Just as something where you have to pay extra for it? Is it worth $250 or an average ticket price of $200 to watch the game with 40,000 people instead of, you know, 15,000 people? Not from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's the most unique venue or anything. It's the football stadium. We've all been there. It's not like you're going, you know, Fenway Park or you're going to, you know, some of these real, you know, where the first one was held in Buffalo, where it's sort of unique and exciting. I mean, this year's Winter Classic in Nationals Park in Washington, is that it's not that exciting to me.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a hockey game taking place outdoors in a baseball.
It's a moneymaker at the end of the day. I mean, the fans here, my position on outdoor games, I think they're overblown. I mean, I would like for if they were to play an outdoor game here, which it appears they will do not next season, but the season after, there were a Legends game or a game with a bunch of the old Winnipeg Jets, then yeah, that's something I'd probably get on board with. But yeah, of course, you know, the quality of play for the most part, and this season's game outside Chicago, Washington, excluded from that, is generally pretty poor quality of play. The ice is unpredictable, and the players are cold and all that stuff. I mean, the elements are the elements.
Well, last year when Pittsburgh played Chicago outdoors at Soldier Field, that's the Pittsburgh Penguins, Sidney Crosby against Jonathan Toews. I want to see that game not outside where the elements are a factor and the game is not played as it's meant to be played. I want to see that game indoors where those two great players can play each other in a legitimate, you know, contest that doesn't have any of the ancillary distractions that go along with it.
At the end of the day, I understand why people like the event, and it's unfortunate they couldn't come to an agreement here. But I don't know if the blame lies any particular side. I mean, if you read the story in Gary's story, which is a really good story, it sounds like both parties had their positions, and it didn't seem unreasonable.
I don't think it's unreasonable at all. I think just the nature of the beast, I think, is that a lot of people are going to blame the Bombers for this because it's a lot easier to kick.
That's funny, because when I read Gary's article, it's like people always seem to blame the Bombers, and I thought Gary's article was very even-handed in terms of, the story was fair. Very fair.
If you're Wade Miller, your number one and only concern upcoming for the Bombers is to make sure that the Grey Cup is an unmitigated success, because that's going to generate a whole bunch of money, $5 million, $6 million for the Winnipeg Football Club, an organization that has debts they have to pay on their new stadium.
It's true.
And can't afford to, only have 32,000 or 35,000 people in the stands because the other 5,000 people they needed to sell it out decided to hold back their money and spend it on the winter on a Heritage Classic game in Winnipeg. You can't take that risk. You can't put those two events.
It's also the publicity too, right? Not just the money for the tickets, but the publicity around the event.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, the focus for the Bombers want the focus of the sports community to be from September until December to be on the Grey Cup in Winnipeg, not anything else that's taking place.
And if you were guaranteed that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers would be in the Grey Cup now, then you would, of course, be okay with the events on the same weekend. But if you're not going to guarantee that, obviously you're not going to guarantee that, then you can't have that. Because if it is Calgary against Hamilton, it would be overshadowed by the hockey game.
And I think this Grey Cup is going to be a hard enough sell as is because, for whatever reason, and we know the reason, it's the struggles of the Bombers organization. There's not a ton of love lost there, I think, between the public and the Bombers because of how things have been handled, not necessarily by this Bombers, management, but by the previous management. And so I think the Bombers need all the help they can get and are going to be struggling tooth and nail to sell out that Grey Cup, and they can't afford to potentially lose it to the Jets just in the name of being a good corporate citizen. I don't think it works for them in this instance. Now, 1 year delay, 2 years delay, it doesn't make a difference to me. It's not like the Winter or the Heritage Classic was being held here in Winnipeg because it's the 30th anniversary of something.
True.
It's just, it'll be next year. That's all. I mean, it doesn't really make a difference from my perspective. Hockey fans will sign up to go to it.
They hadn't actually even formally announced it yet.
No, of course, which is ironic. So they're canceling something they haven't formally announced. But, I mean, it is something that the Bombers, I don't fault Wade Miller on this one at all. I think that they had to take care of, first and foremost, themselves. And if the NHL refused to accept the date of January or February, and some of the NHL's reasoning that it's too close to the All-Star game and they don't want the focus to be on overshadowed of the All-Star game. I mean, come on. A Heritage Classic in Winnipeg only matters in Winnipeg and whatever city they're playing against.
That's very true. I agree with that 100%.
This isn't the January 1st National Spotlight game, and we'll talk about that coming up a little later in the show.
It's a good one, actually.
Boston-Montreal. Yeah, that's a great one. That's going to attract some attention across the sporting landscape. If it's Winnipeg and Minnesota or Winnipeg and Chicago, it only matters in those two cities. Because last year, I promise you, when BC played or when Vancouver played Ottawa at BC Place, nobody gave a damn. Why would you?
Only thing that came from that game was the Luongo. I think the Luongo comments, right?
Yeah. Well, no, Luongo,
he benched Luongo.
They didn't start him, and so he was traded about a week after it was. So that was the only interesting part of that. I mean, they didn't sell it out in Vancouver because you can say what you want about the Vancouver sports fan, but you know they're a bit of a bandwagon fan. I would suggest
they are a bandwagon fan for sure, Drew. That's for sure. But also, Ottawa's not any good, and Vancouver's terrible last year. So
and there's what's the history between the Vancouver also between true. Vancouver
yeah,
and Ottawa?
Fair enough.
So in any event, it's going to be delayed a year, and that's something that I'm perfectly okay with. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look around the NHL with some NHL news and notes.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek, a special Tuesday edition here on TSN 1290. Alongside analyst Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Before we get to news and notes, we'll do a quick roundabout in the NHL, given that there's a number. It's a Tuesday, so there's a lot more games going on.
It's still midweek, I guess. It's like not really midweek, though. Should we change the name for one
well,
show?
Well, it's what do you consider? Is Thursday midweek?
Well, if Thursday's midweek, then Tuesday's midweek.
Right. So is it early week? Is Monday, Tuesday considered early week? Thursday, Friday, late week? Wednesday, midweek?
I'll leave that to you, Drew.
Okay, we'll discuss that after the show. We might have to have a whole rebranding strategy. Might be very complicated.
NHL news and notes.
I like that, Remus. Remus is taking over here.
Well, then we're all in trouble then. We need more than just a rebranding update at that point in time. Daniel Carcillo of the Chicago Blackhawks, 6-game suspension for his hit to Matthew Perreault.
Well, you're telling me on Saturday he's not going to get anything.
Well, I didn't tell you he wasn't going to get anything. I didn't say that at all.
He 6 games is more than warranted. Daniel Carcillo is a dirty player. He doesn't. As I said on Saturday's show, he doesn't ever look for the puck. I mean, he's a headhunter. Occasionally scores random goals, but there's nothing wrong with suspension. If anything, it should be even more. But I'm happy the NHL coming down heavy-handed here. I thought this was a fair suspension. I'm always in favor of the heavier one, but I don't have an issue with this at all. I find it interesting that he's returning if he is put in the lineup, which I think is a big if, for the February 6th game here in Winnipeg on a Friday night.
Yeah, that's the next time Chicago plays here. Big if he is actually in the lineup. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, why did the Blackhawks keep him employed?
Why? Because they like that intimidation. They like the ability of a guy like that to distract the other team. They like the ability of Daniel Carcillo to maybe stick up for their best players. And, you know, he can move around the ice a bit. I don't know. I don't have much use for him. I've said that on the show on countless occasions. Mm-hmm. But these teams continue to employ these types of players. So
it's interesting. When the announcement came out yesterday, and, you know, of course, Twitter blew up, as Twitters want to do over anything, you know, that people were going through his suspension history and looking at compared to a guy like Matt Cook or, you know, other guys who really, you know, you say their name and you have to make an immediately sour face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carcillo's suspended a lot more often on a games played basis than a guy like Matt Cook ever has been. Yet, for whatever reason, I don't think, I mean, Carcillo's got a bad rap, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he's at the top of the list of people that would say, you know, this is a guy who has to be out of the league. He's probably second or third on that list, but he's not really right at the top for whatever reason.
I mean, Matt Cook. The thing about Dan Carcillo is, like, Dan Carcillo doesn't pretend to be anything other than what he is. Right. I think that's the difference between Matt Cook. Matt Cook pretends to be something that he's not. And that's why people don't like him. And he's a dirty player, and he's underhand about what he's doing. Like, Daniel Carcillo comes up to you and cross-checks you. Like, not maybe you're not looking, but he cross-checks you. It's blatant. Mm-hmm. Whereas Matt Cook goes by you, sticks out his leg, and acts like he didn't do anything. That's why players hate Cook more than they hate Carcillo. That's why, for sure.
Because Cook tries to be
covered up, pretend
it.
That he's not doing it. You know? Who even knows if he stood on if he stepped on Carlson's ankle? Okay. Who knows? People didn't know. I mean, people didn't think that he did, but because it's Matt Cook, you weren't sure.
Sure.
Carcillo, you know if he's trying to step on your ankle.
He doesn't hide it. So yeah. I guess honor among thieves in that he doesn't hide his tendencies. Reports,
no pun intended there.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Reports are, and it's supposed to be announced apparently this coming weekend, that the 2016 Winter Classic will be played at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, between the Boston Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. You know,
Might be deflated pucks, I heard.
Pardon me?
It might be deflated pucks at the game.
Yeah, deflated pucks, exactly right. Right two teams, right venue, you're okay with all that?
Yeah, I mean, Drew, if you're going to have two teams play, you might as well have some kind of history. You mentioned Ottawa, Vancouver last year, kind of a useless combination of teams. And this I like. If you're going to put, and even Washington, Chicago, well, it was a good game, kind of a useless combination of teams. Well, you know, why is there an interest in the game?
Sure.
Ovechkin and Taves aside, of course. I like the traditional rivalries. Detroit-Toronto. I mean, again, traditional rivalry there, but Montreal-Boston is not only probably the most traditional rivalry in the National Hockey League, but I would say the most heated rivalry in reality. Like Montreal and Boston, you go to those cities and you talk to people who go to those cities. They hate that. Montreal fans hate the Bruins, and the Bruins fans hate Montreal. I mean, if you talk to people, Toronto-Montreal, that might be the one that people talk about in Canada. That's not the real rivalry here. The Habs fans are far more concerned about the Bruins.
Well,
they hate the Bruins.
Nobody's concerned about the Leafs.
You know what I mean in terms of the Canadian connection here. And the Bruins fans do not like the Habs fans. So I think, you know, it's going to be a lot of liquor in that place and a huge arena, a huge stadium. It's going to be an interesting one.
And the proximity between Boston and Montreal, it's not a difficult game for people in Montreal to get down to.
For sure.
So, I mean, I think that will be a very exciting venue. Are you surprised they went with Gillette Stadium as opposed to, say, Fenway Park again?
Well, Fenway Park's capacity is 32, I think.
Yeah, much smaller. Yeah. Absolutely, much smaller.
Money.
Just money.
Money.
Well, sure, you put another, you know, 40,000 people in there, whatever Gillette Stadium actually holds. Something not too far from that.
Probably 65 to 70.
Yeah, well, you'd think so. And then all of a sudden, and I think the visuals of that are also just, you know.
Money.
You
that's all that matters. They don't care about anything else.
Yeah.
Don't pretend like they do. It's money.
Yeah. They're consistent, I suppose, in that way. Sort of like Daniel Carcillo.
Yes.
He only cares about injuring somebody. Doesn't pretend to do anything else. Robin Regier returns to the Los Angeles Kings lineup, the Kings blue line, earlier this week. He did against Calgary, I believe, yesterday. Big addition to the LA Kings, getting Regier back in the lineup?
Well, there's no question about it, Drew. I mean, when you don't have Slava Voynov back there and you have that, you know, Regier isn't going to necessarily be the guy who helps you move the puck because, frankly, he's not offensively gifted guy. But he certainly steadies the bottom four in LA there. And, you know, obviously Martinez and you have Matt Green. But Regier is able to play against the other team's best players. He's physical. He sets a tone. He helps their depth. He's a very important player for the Los Angeles Kings, who are facing injuries now. And, I don't trust San Jose, and I think the Kings will eventually pass San Jose. But the Kings are going to have to start playing desperate ASAP.
Well, you speak about the Kings playing desperate hockey, and then you look at last night's game. I mean, the Calgary Flames are on one of those difficult Western road trips right now, and you keep expecting the Flames to drop off.
They're good. Flames are good. You watch the Flames, they're good.
Yeah, well, they beat...
I don't expect a drop-off.
They beat the Los Angeles Kings last night in overtime.
Doesn't matter. They're good. You watch them play, they're good. Yeah. I'm telling you, they move the puck. Their defense is very good, and they're very good at taking that puck out of their own zone. You watch the Flames transition their defense to offense as quickly as anybody, and it takes pressure off their young players, and they have some veterans up there. Obviously, they have the Glenn Cross injury, but that defense, to me, is what drives that team.
So, let's talk more about the Flames. Right now, if the playoffs were to start today, they're in a playoff spot. They are at 53 points in 46 games. The Los Angeles Kings, who they defeated last night, 52 points in 46 games.
I would be, if I was a team, I would prefer to play, if I was a playoff team, I would prefer to play Vancouver or San Jose before playing Calgary. Because Calgary plays hard, they have that ability to come back, and the transition game is very good. Now, again, offensively, sure, do they have a ton of top-end talent? No. I mean, some guys who are going to be that. You know, Monahan, obviously a really nice young player. Johnny Gaudreau is very good.
Mm-hmm.
He's exceptionally skilled. And, you know, you have goaltenders who've been there before. You know, and Hiller, who's been there before.
And, well, I mean, the best part about the Flames is they're doing it without Jonas Hiller right now.
I know. I'm saying in the playoffs when you're going to go with the guy, your horse.
But, I mean, there's Yuri Otero, who... I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know much about him aside from the fact that all he seems to do as of late is win games for the Calgary Flames.
Right.
They would play Anaheim if the playoffs started today. Now, of course, things are going to happen here. I think San Jose probably fades off that spot, to be honest, but that's just my opinion.
Fades out
the playoffs entirely.
Really? You see them falling all the way out?
Yeah.
I mean, they're only a point ahead of the Flames, and the Flames have a game in hand. So you're not far off when you say that, especially with the way San Jose continues to struggle. And you know, we talked about it on Saturday's show about, you know, James Myrtle reporting that there was just a big miscommunication.
Yeah, everything in the organization's a mess there. Yeah. Everything is. And now they get injuries. We'll talk about it later in the show. I mean, who's writing that ship?
It's a fair point. I don't know that anybody's necessarily writing that ship.
I don't think Vancouver is that particularly good. I think they're better than San Jose, though. And I think LA is good enough to get in there. But you know, there's starting to be a little separation. I mean, the Jets, we've talked about them. Obviously, we're not going to continue talking about them tonight. But they look almost entrenched in a playoff spot at this point.
It would take a remarkable fall off.
And I don't expect one. They're so consistent in the way they've played for the most part that it'd be hard to, and based on the teams behind them and the runs that they'd have to go on, be hard.
Well, I mean, you talk about the Jets. I mean, and I what is it? Is the most games they've gone without earning a point two in a row since that, you know, 1-4 start at the beginning of the season?
That seems like a Rick Ralph stat. Remus, do you know anything about that?
Remus wasn't listening.
I always love when you ask Remus a question, you know he wasn't listening. Get on here for a second, Remus. Like, we know you're not listening.
Sorry, I'm working on the podcast here, guys. Okay, doesn't get put up on its own.
Well, fair enough, but what were we talking about there?
You asking me?
Yeah. We're quizzing you if you knew what we were talking about.
The Flames goalie who all he does is win?
Oh, God.
That was about 5 minutes
ago. Yeah, that's like three topics ago.
Yeah.
Look, I'm putting on the podcast. I'm getting guests for the roundtable. I'm a busy guy.
You're wearing headphones. You would think you'd be able to hear us in your ears.
Guests for the roundtable.
You'd think.
So Remus, how many games have the Jets gone without getting a point? Do you know the number?
Oh, eight? I don't know. I can look it up. I have no idea.
Eight's not. Obviously, you didn't understand the question.
Turn your own mic off.
Without getting a point?
No. Like, with how many games have they gone and they played in a row without getting any points? Is it two or three? How many games?
Oh, they're on a four-game win streak right now.
Oh, you still don't understand the question. The question is very simple. How since the beginning of the season and the 1-4 start?
Yes.
We feel like this would be a Rick Ralph stat that he would know. Of course, you being a part of Rick Ralph's show.
Well, I don't know if Rick would admit that.
Yeah,
I think I listened to Rick's show. Well, clearly, you don't listen to this one.
I'll tell you what.
I don't think they've lost. Have they lost back-to-back games? I don't think so.
Yes, they have lost back-to-back games because
they have. Yes,
but I mean, I think the most games they've gone in a row without earning a point.
Oh, that's what you mean.
Is
okay.
Two.
And they phrase it like that.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe it's two in a row.
I think you're right.
Yes, which is, I mean, that's a playoff team. That's consistency right there. No big losing streaks.
They don't get blown out.
It's been consistent. Yeah, it's just consistent in the way that they're playing.
Yeah.
And that's translating, especially against a bunch of these teams who aren't consistent in the way they play.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about a team in the Eastern Conference that nobody's really talking about. The Washington Capitals. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Quarter after 7 in the evening here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest running independent comedy club in North America. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. This week at Rumors, Kelly Taylor is in town. The 7:15 p.m. show on Saturday is already sold out, so that's a good sign that there is going to be a sellout for most of his shows. Get your tickets immediately, rumorscomedyclub.com, and check out the entire lineup of great comedians, including some fantastic concert series events coming up at Rumors throughout the months ahead of us here. Richard, we're watching in studio here the Flyers-Penguins game. How many games for Zach Rinaldo for the hit he just leveled on Chris Letang? Letang had his back to the play, was completely defenseless. Rinaldo left his feet and drove Letang's head straight into the glass.
Yeah, you know, Drew, Rinaldo, I believe, is a repeat offender as well.
He is a repeat offender.
He's the same as Carcillo. I mean, these guys have no place in the league as far as I'm concerned. I would give him probably at least 8 games for that.
again, just heavy handed. Stop. I mean, the guy makes the play. If you just so you're, if you haven't seen it yet, which you probably haven't because it just happened.
I'm sure Remus is sending out a vine of it right now.
That's true. Letang makes the play and his back's up against the boards, and Ronaldo runs him, unsuspecting really, Letang, and jumps into him and smokes his head into the boards. A ridiculous play. Not surprising if you watch Zach Ronaldo play. Another guy who doesn't play the puck. I mean, remember, the goal of hockey is to play the puck, put the puck into the net. He just disregards where the puck is, doesn't care, and wants to make a physical play, which often is stupid. And here he's taking a 5-minute penalty and has been kicked out of the game, rightfully so. And that will for sure be reviewed by the National Hockey League. And Ronaldo once again proving he's fairly useless when it comes to contributing to his team's play.
Yeah, well, he contributes to the success of the Philadelphia Flyers, which would explain why they're currently 25th in the NHL, maybe.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got bigger issues than Zach Ronaldo, but,
Yeah. One team that's doing very well this year is the Washington Capitals. If you flip open your NHL standings right now, you'd find the Capitals in the first wild card spot, tied with the New York Rangers, in fact, for the third place in the Metropolitan Division. The Rangers have a couple games in hand. But, the Capitals, brought in Barry Trotz in the offseason, sort of finally stabilized their coaching position after a couple of years where they were constantly cycling through various head coaches. Are you surprised at the success that Barry Trotz is having with the Washington Capitals so far?
Picked him to win the division. I hope I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm not shocked by this, Drew. I think it's put up or shut up for Alexander Ovechkin here, and he really has put up more than anything. Already has a couple goals tonight, too.
Yes.
But overall, in the course
of... They're playing an AHL team in the Oilers, though.
In the course of the season, though, he's really had a... he's had there's been a nice change in his game. Barry Trotz has instilled kind of a quiet confidence and I think a consistency more than anything in the way that they play. And you can't understate the importance of adding Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen. Now, I don't love either contract, frankly. But on a short-term basis, Brooks Orpik has made a world of difference in terms of stability on the back end on a team that doesn't have a ton of stability. And Matt Niskanen certainly helps the team skating and moving the puck out of his own zone. What they've done there now is they have depth on their back end, which you like, right?
Sure.
And before we talk about the great play of Braden Holtby so far this year, you look at the back end, now they have John Carlson move the puck, Mike Green, for all his warts, moving the puck, certainly less pressure and attention paid to him so far this year. Matt Niskanen, I mean, you have three right-handed shooting defensemen who can all skate and move the puck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those aren't a dime a dozen. Those are very rare here. Now, the Jets, of course, with three of the same, Bufflin, Bogosian, and Trouba, again, they're rare. I mean, Detroit would give you a lot for one of those guys, and a lot of other teams would as well. So I think that's king. And then, of course, Alzner and Orpik, you're getting a nice... The defense, when the Washington Capitals, were a team that everybody was talking about being a threat to be that cup team or go far, they never had the defense they have now. And I think that's so important. Now, Holtby's been very good. And he seems to have that demeanor for goaltending. Mm-hmm. And their forwards can score. I mean, again, I think it's more about the back end. It's commitment to defense. And that's, of course, a team commitment. But I like the talent level and finally spending some money on the back end on the right places. Not playing the John Erskines and different guys who just were playing above their head. Not making guys earn it as much. Not forcing it with the guys in their back end there. And that's what I think is the most important.
Well, to that point about, sort of a more of a team and an organizational commitment to team defense, was Barry Trotz the perfect head coach for the Washington Capitals when he became available?
It's a good question. Yeah, I think he was, Drew. I think for him... It's a media market that still doesn't have a ton of attention.
Sure, like Nashville.
It's not Toronto. And it had a talent base that he didn't have in Nashville, especially up front, but had, some nice pieces there. And I think it was a good fit for him. He goes in there. The expectations were low as well, similar to Nashville. Had a lot of similarities with more talent. And, top-end forward talent. So I think it's a nice fit for Barry Trotz. He's done a nice job so far. But for saying all that, we know that making the playoffs and Alexander Ovechkin doing something in the playoffs is most important here.
Well, he
has stabilized the franchise in any event, but the playoffs are still important. Remember, you still have Ovechkin here in the end of his middle or later part of his prime.
Sure. Similar to Crosby in Pittsburgh. Yes. The clock is ticking. Yes. It's hard to believe, but the clock is ticking. Yeah. Do you see a renewed commitment from Alex Ovechkin?
Well, renewed would mean that it was there before.
Okay, do you see a commitment?
I see an improved commitment from Alex Ovechkin.
Okay.
Is it ever going to be great? I don't know. I don't think so. But it's better than it was before. And I see resiliency in the team and a mental toughness in the team that I don't think was there before.
Here's Barry Trotz speaking to Chuck Gormley, frequent guest on this show. I think we can be a playoff team that wins, Trotz says. Yeah. We still need a piece or two, I think. We have some guys that at this level are pretty good contributing players, but the playoffs are another level, and I don't know if some of our guys are ready for that. Sort of laying out a challenge to his team, and he's probably, you know, he knows his squad obviously better than we do. Sort of interesting comments from a coach at that point in time. Is he challenging his team, or is he sort of lowering expectations? Lower expectations and overperform.
That's a good question. I think a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
I think when he talks about adding somebody, I think you want to add one more guy in your top six who can score a bit. I like some of their checking guys, Drew. I like. Brooks Lake isn't the player he once was, but Brooks Lake, Joel Ward, Troy Brower, those guys, Jason Chimera, those guys can muck it up when you need to.
Sure.
And one more guy, you don't want to put too much pressure on Evgeny Kuznetsov, guys like that, to perform offensively. You want to compliment maybe Ovechkin and Backstrom with somebody up front there. That's what I think he'd be talking about.
Here's Trotz continuing to Chuck Gormley. We'll see, said Trotz, who has never coached in the conference final. We still have another 40 games to go. I think we have enough pieces to be a real good threat, but our depth hasn't been really tested to this point. That's why we need to have our young guys continue to develop, and you need to have depth in the organization. I think we're pretty deep on defense as an organization, but at forward we could use a little more, and that's just waiting for guys like Andre Burakovsky, Tom Wilson, Evgeny Kuznetsov to develop. Sort of to what you said there about needing another top six player.
You need another top six guy. And, they don't grow on trees, but there's going to be some that are available and they'll pop up here. And, maybe some place, you look at Antoine Vermette.
Well, that's the guy who's been linked to Washington as of late very much.
He'd make sense there.
Sure.
I'd probably even want a little bit. No, Vermette would be a nice player there.
And Ryan O'Reilly also been talked about as potentially.
He would be the kind of guy that really helped there, but you have to give up a lot more for O'Reilly than you would have to for Vermette, excuse me.
Sure, for Vermette.
Vermette's a penny UFA, and O'Reilly has another year in his contract, younger player as well.
Yeah, for O'Reilly, you're giving up a draft pick and a prospect, one of your first-round picks or a second-round pick that's been, Madison Bowie, obviously.
Yeah, you're not giving up Madison Bowie.
No, you're not going to give him up, but that's the kind of guy that Colorado is going to ask for in exchange to get
that's right.
Ryan O'Reilly.
That's absolutely right.
Nicklas Backstrom.
Very underrated player.
I was going to say, is he the best player to never play in an All-Star game that's currently in the NHL?
I'd have to see the list.
Yeah, I don't know what the list is
but
either.
But he's an all-star. I mean, there's very few guys who see the ice as well as Nicklas Backstrom. Tremendous passer, puts the puck where it needs to be at all times, can protect the puck well, not the biggest guy in the world, but, not like Forsberg. Forsberg a little more aggressive and a little more of a temper on him, but, that Swedish center who can set up guys, draw them to him, just very smart player. Number one center for sure.
Just goes about his business. You never really hear a lot about him. He's just, he's in and around, always at a point of game pretty much every year.
He's a tremendous player, Drew.
Yeah. You mentioned Braden Holtby. Let's talk. You said, his demeanor. What did you mean by that when you said his demeanor?
He seems to shake off the losses really well, and that's what you have to do as a goalie. It's that whole short memory thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty Brodeur is the king at that, right? I mean, the guy doesn't even remember when he has a bad game. And that's what's kept him around as long as he's been playing. Obviously he's kind of still playing right now. But the idea is that you're able to shut out, no pun intended there, the pressure and shut out the critics. And look at the numbers say one thing, but I like the way he's come along. He's faced some adversity. He had the success in the playoffs a couple years ago, didn't come easily after that. And I think that builds character. And he's been relied on. He's the number one guy, undoubtedly. Now they don't have really that those two guys. I like that for him too. He has he had the ability to come out and grab the job. He has grabbed the job. Knows he's the number one guy, and I think his teammates feed off of that. And I think as well he feeds off that.
Sure. I mean, I was going to mention that, in the last couple of years, he's had Michael Neuwirth there, who's now in Buffalo. I think Yaro Halak was there for about an hour, I think. I think that was last year, wasn't it?
Yes. Buffalo to Washington? Yeah.
Yeah. And then Washington traded him to the Islanders before free agency started.
I'm trying to remember.
That's how it went. But Holtby, now that he's sort of, it's his job. And remember, it wasn't that long ago he was talked about as potentially being a goaltender for Team Canada at the Sochi Olympics.
That's what goaltenders are, though. Up and down pretty quick.
Yeah.
2 years ago, Michael Hutchinson, nobody knew about him.
Yeah, you're right about that. But you look at him this year, I mean, he's 16th in terms of goals against average. He's actually probably better than that. A lot of those guys that are included there, have played four games or two games.
He's been excellent. You watch the Capitals play. He's been very steady.
Yeah.
Difficult to play. And he's a battler. I like Braden Holtby. I think he's obviously another key to their success. It's that defense and goaltending for me is the difference. I mean, talk all you want about Ovechkin buying and all that stuff, and that matters for sure. But so does better goaltending, and I know that they're not mutually exclusive. And of course, solidifying the back end.
Sure, if you have 17 players who 17 players on your active roster who are committed to defense, and you have Alex Ovechkin, you can let him freelance a little bit more.
That's right.
The problem is when you had 17 guys freelancing and one guy committed to defense.
That's right. Mike Green, playing your big time minutes on the back end and really giving it back in his own zone, especially on the forecheck, getting dominated on the forecheck.
Sure.
Well, that's not happening anymore.
Well, I mean, and John Carlson sort of taken over that.
He's been better this year than he was last year, Drew. You watched him last year. Lack of progression. I was concerned about him. Watch him this year, he's been a lot better.
Sure.
A lot more confident, moving the puck better, playing better defensively as well, which is important.
Yeah. Washington Capitals, a team to keep an eye out in the Eastern Conference. We'll see them here twice after the All-Star break, the Jets will be there for one, and we'll see them back here for another one, because Jets have not yet played the Washington Capitals this season. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll look at some injury notes from around the NHL. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca, 7:30 in the evening here on a Tuesday night, special Tuesday edition of NHL Midweek. Saturday, 12 noon, The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's All-Star break this weekend, though, so... always a little bit of a tougher show because there's not a lot of news going on.
Show, Drew. Come on. What are you talking about?
We're pros, of course. But, unless you want to break down what happens in Friday night. Oh, no. I guess the skills competition is Saturday night. What about, you think, 2-hour preview of the skills competition? That's sufficient for Saturday?
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to make sure you're okay with that. And next Wednesday, of course, NHL Midweek. Back to its regular date and time. The Jets open their post-All-Star break schedule Tuesday night in Pittsburgh, and then they move on to the City of Brotherly Love Thursday against the Philadelphia Flyers.
It's not as hard as a back-to-back. They're not playing two nights in a row, but it's not as hard of a two-game trip as it used to be.
Yeah, and you probably looked at it at the beginning of the schedule. I think this Jets team thinks that they can play with the Pittsburgh Penguins because we saw that they could back at MTS Center.
They can play with Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia is pretty bad. They really are. I mean, they're not a good team. Their defense is not very good. Their goaltending, they obviously had injuries there. That's not, again, I know Philadelphia came in here at the end of December and kind of stole one, but certainly nothing the Jets, especially the way the Jets have been performing on the road, it wouldn't be something that would be overly intimidating.
No, exactly, especially given the Jets' league-best road record, like you mentioned. And, I mean, that win that Philly had here was more of a function, I think, of the Jets giving away the game than it was Philly, winning the game. Full props to them for the victory and all, but the Jets, certainly had a two-goal lead late in the game and lost that game as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries from around the NHL will start in Tampa Bay, where the Lightning have lost defenseman Matt Carl for 6 to 8 weeks after he's going to undergo surgery for torn adductor muscles, which is in and around, I believe, the abdomen area. I'm not a doctor, but I'll play one on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
How big of an injury for the Tampa Bay Lightning to lose Matt Carl?
It hurts, Drew, but they got a lot of guys to move the puck. Yeah, you got Hedman back now. Obviously, he's a stud back there, and you have Strawman and Garrison. I mean, these guys can move the puck. It's a loss. I mean, Matt Carl is a good player. I don't think it's something that's insurmountable in terms of handling it for the squad. I think it's something they'll be okay to deal with. Their depth and up front, the performance of that second quote-unquote line, although it's just been tremendous, has been great, and this team is well built. So will it hurt them? Sure. And Gudas being out too obviously hurts him from a more physical standpoint, certainly mm-hmm. more physical than Matt Carl. But I don't think it's a backbreaker.
No, it's but you're right. 6 to 8 weeks will mean he should be back healthy, assuming everything goes well, for the in time for the NHL playoffs. So you wonder about, had Tampa known of obviously about all these injuries, would they have been so quick to trade Eric Brewer? Probably not, but you never know. Hindsight, of course, what they say it is.
Eric Brewer isn't also the defenseman that people maybe remember him being a few years ago.
Of course, he's not the same player, but you know they're bringing in, you know, actually, although he is an AHL All-Star, Nikita Nesterov going to take a, you know, play some games on the back end for the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know,
it's one of those things where you have to fill that one spot, right? Like, I mean, Matt Carl's a good player. He skates well for a big guy, moves the puck well. But when you look at it overall, if Stroman, Hedman, and Garrison are all eating over 20 minutes, you just have to have one guy step in and play a few more minutes. And I know Gudas might have been the guy that they would rely on in the normal course, but there are guys you mentioned calling up from the minors. You need some guys to step up. Remember, it's not like Winnipeg here. You need three guys to step up. You need one.
Sure.
And you're an offensive team that's going to spend a lot of time in the offensive zone. Takes pressure off that extra guy. So I wouldn't be... You know, sure, it's a loss and it's a concern, especially for positioning, right? I mean, that's really what you're looking at if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning now.
Yeah.
Where are we positioned in terms of the playoffs? Detroit's 1 point behind, winning tonight, obviously. Montreal's is nipping at your heels as well. So you don't want to lose home ice advantage when it comes to the playoffs. And you're not even that far up on the other teams. So that's your concern. But overall, I don't think it's as big of a deal maybe some make it out to be.
San Jose Sharks had a bad injury night on Monday night against New Jersey, losing both defenseman Justin Braun and forward Tommy Wingles. The length of the time they're going to be out of the lineup isn't yet known, but according to head coach Todd McClellan and via Kevin Kurz of CSNBayArea.com, quote, they'll both be out for a while. So those two injuries for the Sharks, how significant are they?
Significant. Wingles is an underrated player. He's an active player. Hits, gets on pucks. He's a good player. But Justin Braun is your two-way defenseman. You can kind of, you know, he's not the most dominant offensive defenseman by any means, but he's a solid two-way defenseman, Drew. And playing alongside Brandon Dillon, that was the guy's nice, you know, complement to each other. What happens there now is you lose a top four. But you're not, and the difference here is it's similar in that a guy, you're losing a top four defenseman like Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
The difference here is that Tampa Bay has more depth up front and on the back end than San Jose does. And I think that Tampa Bay is better equipped to deal with it. And they're not the San Jose team is very fragile right now.
Sure.
And the Wingles injury hurts your depth up front because you're trying to go with a three line attack in a way. Now, do you keep Couture and Marleau together and Pavelski and Thornton together, or do you spread it out again? Because Wingles maybe compliments one of those guys. I don't know. I don't love San Jose's depth this year. I think there's a considerable lack of depth up front on the back end, and I think that's a huge loss. Especially, again, Tampa's in the playoffs. It's a matter of positioning. We're not really going to make the playoffs. San Jose, I think they're going to fade out.
Well, San Jose, certainly, like you said, in the midst of a dogfight when it comes to the Pacific Division and everything else. We were just talking about it before when you looked at,
you know, what
Calgary
do you do
and Los Angeles.
Like, who's stepping up? Is Matt Irwin stepping up? I mean, Scott Hannon's too old to step up to play a really good top 4 minute role. So who's going to step up? You already got Brent Burns back there, and he's a talented player, but a wild card at times. And Vlasic's a tremendous player, and I like Brendan Dillon. But who are you playing with him? I mean, you really should be playing a puck mover with him because he's your solid stay at home guy.
Yeah,
who's that going to be? I mean, is it going to be Irwin? Okay, then who's playing your third pairing?
Well, your seventh defenseman is Dylan DeMello, who I can't tell you a thing about. But you're right.
Yeah,
you
know. I don't know enough about the guys who are the seventh defenseman there. Except just to tell you that if they were, I'll put it to you this way, if they were that effective, they would be playing over the likes of Hannon.
Looks like Hannon and Matt Irwin and Matt Tennyson, who
I've seen Tennyson play once. I don't know anything about him really, so I can't say. But I just, again, the depth on the back end is such that if these guys were real players right now and they thought they could help them, this is not a team that's rebuilding. They're trying to win. They would have been playing more.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with that.
And Tom McClellan's trying to keep his job.
Well, and
if he wants it.
To your point about the fragility of the team, or the fragile, if you're a fan of that movie, Christmas Story.
Remus, can you get in here? What is he talking about?
Christmas Story, Drew?
You've never seen a Christmas Story?
Our sponsor is Bernstein's Deli.
There, see? Thank you, Remus.
I've never seen the movie.
Really?
It's Hustler's favorite. No, I've never seen it.
Has Hustler seen it?
It's Hustler's favorite movie.
What's the movie?
Christmas Story.
A Christmas Story.
Never seen it.
You've never seen, you know, a Christmas Story?
Why would
story?
I watch it?
Yeah.
Well, just because you're Jewish doesn't mean you can't enjoy a nice family movie every now and then.
Yeah, it does.
Why would he watch a family movie, though? He's, you know, like...
It airs on Christmas Day. There's not a lot going on.
There's five basketball games.
I stick to Home Alone, Bad Santa.
Bad Santa's good.
That's good. I choose those. Oh, Jingle All the Way. Those are my three.
Jingle All the Way. No. Bad Santa movie. And Home Alone. Home Alone 2 before Jingle All the Way.
I regret even mentioning it to start. Ask somebody else afterwards if they understand what the word... If you said to somebody outside of this room and said to them, do you know what movie the word fragile is from? I promise you they'll know what it's from.
There's a Simpsons episode where they say fragile.
Well, that's where it comes from.
Talking about the movie Fragile?
No, I'm not talking about another movie. I'm talking about... Oh, forget it. Calgary Flames placed Curtis Glencross on the injured reserve with a lower body injury. We talked about the Flames earlier and their really impressive play. You're impressed. You think that they're a playoff team. Mm-hmm. How serious is that injury for Calgary, losing Curtis Glencross?
It hurts because Curtis Glencross is a guy you can kind of count on to do a bit of everything. I've always liked his game. Good skater. He can be physical. He can shoot it. He's a good wrist shot. But the Flames kind of come out with you with that attack here, and Glencross isn't as effective as he was, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I still like him, but when you look at it, Drew, you got a bunch of guys contributing. So long as that top four is healthy, and that's to me the key there.
The back end,
yeah, the back end, top four. So long as those guys are healthy, moving the puck out of their own zone, I think they'll be okay. I mean, you can't afford to lose 3-4 more guys, but. This injury, I think they can withstand this. Yeah. I don't think it'll. I still have them as a playoff team.
Well, I mean, you're high on them.
I am. You watch them play. They play hard, and every game. See, that's a thing. Bob Hartley has the same effect on this Calgary team as Paul Maurice has had in Winnipeg. They play hard every night. It's amazing when you watch the Jets and Flames play because really they're talented, but not the most talented teams in the league. But their effort level, as compared to other teams that are even more talented, show you what you need on a night-in-night-out basis. You can talk about systems, talk about all the stuff you want, but the teams play hard, and that's why, to me, that's why they are where they are.
Moving to Phoenix and an injury that actually occurred here in Winnipeg, and didn't see it actually happen at the game. Mikhail Bodker out 4 to 6 weeks after he gets his spleen removed in a Winnipeg hospital after the game on Sunday night.
Well, I mean, Drew, it hurts Bodker because he's going to be an RFA at the end of the year, and contract-wise, he wants to sign a bigger deal.
Sure.
Aside from that, this has no effect on anything. He's not going to get traded. And this
he's a building block for
this team. Out of it. So, mm-hmm. I mean, sure, you don't get to see an injury, but aside from the contract status and the effect it may have on that, there's no real effect on the league here. I mean, you watch Arizona play, you watch them play on Sunday. It's not a good team.
No, it's not a good team. Darcy Kemper in Minnesota. There's now all of a sudden...
Too late there, too. I mean, too late. I mean, they're done. I told you, they're done.
Yeah.
Wild's done.
You know what? I wasn't convinced until they lost last night at home to Columbus.
Well, I was convinced before.
I know you were convinced before, and obviously my prognostication skills on this show have been less than good after I wrote off the Boston Bruins earlier this month.
Yeah.
But, I thought that they had a chance up until losing last night to the Columbus Blue Jackets at
home. They're done.
One P.A. Parenteau in Montreal, he's got concussion-like symptoms. He had missed a couple games, came back, and now he's back on the shelf with his concussion-like symptoms in Montreal.
P.A. Parenteau is what he is. He's just going to be a goal scorer, nothing really else much he's going to bring to the table. And sure, do you miss a goal scoring ability? Yeah, you have a lot of depth in that roster. I don't think this is an injury that's gonna hurt the Habs' chances of making that run for first place in the division. I think it's an injury. It hurts them, but it's not that concerning. Put it that way. And a guy, a guy who's certainly more effective than Daniel Briere, and a guy who rubs people the wrong way, and understandably so, but he can score. And if you can score, you have a place in this league. So, if you look at his production this year, he's a guy that can give you some offense, but it's 15 points. It's not going to be do or die. The Habs have a bunch of guys that can kind of flip in and out and contribute at maybe not that level, but quite similar levels.
Let's head to break. When we come back, it'll be one final segment, and we'll talk about a team that was described by their lead columnist recently as historically inept. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
As usual, Bruce Springsteen welcomes us back to our final segment, whether it be Wednesday or Tuesday, as the case may be, or Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's one of those traditional things we like here. What song is this, Richie? I'm not familiar with it.
That's his best stop at 82nd Street.
What album?
Yeah, it's funny, Drew. You're asking me. This is from, I don't want to screw this up, I'm pretty sure this is from Greetings from Asbury Park, but yeah, I'm almost positive it is. And if it's not, it's from, yeah, it is. Okay, good.
There you go. Attaboy.
I should be able to list that whole album off, but I just for a second I sketched out there.
But yet you don't know the Fragile reference from A Christmas Story.
I know about Bruce Springsteen's Christmas show. He's played a Christmas show at Asbury Park before. I know that.
Do you have that album?
Apparently your psyche, Drew, is quite fragile after that last segment.
There you go. Attaboy. I got you on the bandwagon. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. One final segment here on TSN 1290. Want to talk about the, quote, historically inept Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, have you seen this team play?
Well, I've seen them play twice. The Jets played them twice. That's the only times I've watched them this year. Not sure why you would watch them any other time. Mike Harrington, a frequent guest on the show, good friend of ours, Buffalo News columnist, you know, wrote that. You know, historically inept. He wrote that in Saturday's newspaper following, you know, another Sabres loss. The first team in the last, I think it's dozen years, to lose 10 straight regulation games. Last decade to lose 10 straight games in regulation. Is historically inept too hard? Too harsh of a statement? Or is that a fair commentary?
In this day and age, it's pretty hard to be that terrible. So historically inept, you know, you might have to consider that a pretty valid statement. Drew, to be minus 78 in goal differential in the National Hockey League as it is today, have you seen some of these games? Like, so it's not exactly high quality play this year. I find the NHL this year to be lower quality than in past years for whatever reason. And the Buffalo Sabres are put the low in that low quality. Minus 78 goal differential. They've scored 89 goals. I mean, that's an embarrassment. 89 goals, Drew. 89 goals.
Are you surprised they're this bad? You know, they made some moves in the offseason which seemed as though they were going to improve the team.
How do you score the least amount of goals in the league and allow the most?
Well,
just don't send anybody into the offensive zone. I mean, just it's unbelievable. Now, Ted Nolan's not a good coach, in my opinion. I don't like his coaching. I don't think he's just... Right now, they're waiting to fire him eventually when they get the next guy. And I think at the end of the day, Tim Murray spent his money to get closer, you know, to get to the cap as he needed to.
The floor, you mean.
The floor, excuse me, the cap floor. And at the end of the day, this guy is going to have a pretty good chance of getting Jack Eichel or Connor McDavid. So maybe everybody's laughing, but who's going to be laughing in 6 months from now?
Here's the quote from
6.5 months.
Here's the quote from the Buffalo News. The Sabres entered Saturday's game, so that would be this past Saturday, last in the NHL in goals and last in goals against. Last on the power play and last in shorthanded goals against.
What would you want them to do? Finish 26 and give themselves a worse chance of McDavid or Eichel? Like, what would you want? And be that much better goal differential?
Well,
I don't know.
Are they? I mean, Mike Harrington in the article says that they're disgracing the brand.
I disagree with that. 2 years in a row, I would be more concerned. This year, I'm not as concerned about that. This is a big draft year. You're going to get a game. If Connor McDavid drives from Erie to Buffalo, and he's with your team for 15 to 20 years, scoring 80 to 100 points a year, I'll take that disgrace. I will take that disgrace.
Zadorov,
I always pronounce that the wrong way.
Nikita Zadorov, the defenseman. Rasmus Ristolainen.
And they have some other guys, you know, that coming through the system here. They have a draft. What do they have? How many picks do they have this year? I think it's 8 picks they have in the first 3 rounds. And this is a real deep draft year. So I personally don't think it's a disgrace of the brand. I really don't.
The Philly-Pittsburgh game is getting out of hand, as Philly-Pittsburgh games tend to. Jakub Voracek just beat up Rob Scuderi. Just absolutely leveled him and dropped him with
those fights I don't mind, because Jakub Voracek isn't dropping the gloves for no reason. I like that.
Did you enjoy the Fanoff Eric Staal interaction from last night?
I'm just shocked you haven't asked me about the jersey throwing.
That's why I was going to give you the option. In fact, I was going to give you the option to either discuss the jersey throwing while simultaneously pouring acid on yourself or discussing anything else in the NHL.
Well, I will say one thing. I mean, the jersey throwing. I mean, the organization's such a joke there that the fans pay so much. They pay ridiculous amounts of money to see that team play.
There was nobody at that game last night.
But they pay exorbitant amounts of money to drink a beer there.
As you experienced earlier.
So, I mean, if they're going to throw the jersey on the ice, let them throw their $100 jersey on the ice.
You can't throw the jersey on the ice during the play, though. I mean, that's dangerous. Corbinian Holzer turns around in his own zone. If he blows a tire there and pulls a groin, I mean, come on. That is unacceptable. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's acceptable to throw the jersey on the ice, but if one or two go on, it's not going to be the end of the world. You can't throw a jersey, though, during the play. That's ridiculous. It's just non-starter there.
You have a problem with the police getting involved and ticketing?
In that one, I have no issue with the police getting involved because, again, you could harm a player here.
I'm not... I may be mistaken on this, admittedly, but
what if you throw a jersey that covers a guy's eyes and he gets smoked by? I mean, you know, seriously,
it's definitely dangerous. I believe
throwing the jersey on when you're a timeout. It's like, okay, again, I don't condone it, but I can understand your frustration.
I believe they ticketed and banned everybody who threw a jersey on the ice last night.
You have to do it at this point, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, never mind.
Did you see Fanouf throw one on the ice from the bench? No, you didn't
no.
see that. Yeah.
Did you like Eric Staal taking that slap shot into the empty net?
You know,
I think it just goes to show you what people around the league think of Dion Phaneuf.
I think it does. And I do think it does, Drew. The whole locker room is such a mess there. It's such a mess. And what are they going to do? What's Brandon Shanahan going to do?
Well, there's so much talk, and we don't want to talk about the Leafs because, everybody else talks
about
it.
Sorry I brought it up, but I mean, somebody threw a jersey during the middle of the play.
Yeah, I know. It is a little ridiculous. We agree that Kessel's got trade value.
Mm-hmm. I told you, I think they can trade both those guys.
Can you still trade Phaneuf and get something in return?
Well, I don't. Again, you asked this before. Something, I don't know what something is. You can trade him, though. If you eat some salary and you take back a bad contract, you include a draft pick, you can trade him for sure. But it depends on what it is. I mean, Kessel, you're not going to just trade him for anything. You need to get value back. Phaneuf, if you can get something.
Well, I mean, Kessel's exactly what what he's always been.
People were talking about the Phaneuf and Mike Richards, possibly a combination there. I don't know. I mean, it depends how much. I mean, it appears that Dion Phaneuf needs to get out of that locker room for both himself and for the team.
Sure.
I'm not in that locker room. But apparently the coach firing was going to make a difference. We said it wasn't going to make a difference. We already said that. I mean, that's weeks ago. Whenever they fired Carlisle, we know it doesn't make a difference.
The thing about it, firing him, and I get why they fired Carlisle, but it wasn't going to make a difference. The one thing the Maple Leafs were good at was playing in transition. Now, they could score goals when Randy Carlisle was a coach. They lost game 6-4.
That's the whole point about that. You're going to get all those the stats there about the way they're playing, and I understand. I mean, there's certain... You don't think Randy Carlisle understood the limitations of that team and allowed them to play in a certain way because that was the only way they had a chance to win? I mean, he wasn't born yesterday.
No, that's the thing. So
you think he wants to play that style? You watch his team in Anaheim, he never played that style. But you got to, I know the communication was an issue, but it's great. You can communicate all you want with the players, but it doesn't matter if they don't play harder or they're not performing for you.
Well, and what's the point, though, of just neutering your own team? I don't understand. Just for the sake of saying you're playing a style for a coach who's not going to be there next year.
I mean, again, he's in the second year in a row. Now he's in an interim job he knows he's not going to get.
That's right. So, why change the style? Why fire the coach, one? Why change the style and make your team the easiest team to play against in the league?
Because when you fire your coach, you just continue to postpone any actual responsibility as a general manager or president, because I don't think the general manager has much power there. It's the president.
Sure.
Well, so Brandon Shanahan just puts a little Band-Aid on things.
So like we discussed with Adam Proto of the Hockey News on Saturday show, another fight in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh again. So this is really getting out of control.
So Luke Shen and Steve Downey. Or Luke Shen is serving Steve Downey. So you're getting, there's a lot of hate in the Battle of Pennsylvania, even though these teams really aren't as deep as they were.
Yeah.
Certainly Philly's not as good, and Pittsburgh's good, but I don't think as good as they were in past years. So,
and started, in case you just missed joining us now, Zach Rinaldo left his feet to deliver a hit from behind on Chris Letang. That happened in the first period. Rinaldo will be suspended for a significant number of games, but we're yet to see. And it's obviously carrying over in terms of some good... Braden Shen or Luke Shen there really beat up a lot of blood on his face after that fight against Steve Downey. Entertaining game in that case. Let's talk again. We'll recap tomorrow of the preview of tomorrow's Jets Blue Jackets game again. Your keys to the game for the Jets to win against the Blue Jackets tomorrow night?
Well, Drew, I think you have a team in Columbus that again is trying to scratch their way into this, but has a defense that I think is certainly able to be taken advantage of. I think the Jets use their speed against this back end here. They can find some success off the rush. I think that they can create some offense off the rush here. I think defensively, it's just a matter of getting Trouba back into the groove. You have to make sure you man up against this team in the Columbus team in your own zone, meaning you have to play the body.
and you have to make sure that you clear the front of the net. I mean, that's going to be really important for this squad. And I think it's using your speed against this team and ensuring that you're able to control their size in your own zone. And I think the Jets are capable of doing both. They're big on the back end, and the Jets can skate. And the Jets are playing a mean. It's going to be a mean game tomorrow. You know, again, before the break, and Columbus is desperate. They got to win. Okay. And obviously the Jets, every game is important. But it's the idea that, you know, you're going to see, I think you're going to see some physical play, and you're going to see some pushback, and you're not going to get pushed around.
Quickly, what are you expecting to see from Jacob Trouba tomorrow?
Well, these guys who come back seem to be you know, almost at the top level so quickly. I mean, we talked about Ryan Johansson not even being in training camp and coming back and being fine. Mm-hmm. So Trouba's a bit of a natural in that respect. I think he'll be all right, especially because with Bogosian and Buffalo now ahead of him, and not actually ahead of him. I still think he's the best defenseman on the team defensively. The pressure won't be there to play 25 minutes, so I think he'll fit in quite well. And you know, against the Columbus team, that I'd like to see who Trouba plays against. Will he draw against one of the top two lines? Because those third line guys can score, but they are, you know, their top two lines are a little bit more top heavy per se. So I would expect probably Bogosian, Enstrom, and Bufflin and Sherratt to play against those lines tomorrow, but and Trouba to play against a little bit against them, and then the next game take over back to being the number one kind of shutdown defenseman that the team has been trusting.
Big thank you to Columbus Blue Jackets general manager Jarmo Kekalainen for joining us. Big thank you to Columbus Blue Jackets analyst Jody Shelley. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website for the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. For analyst Richard Pollock and producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.